Hello and welcome to How to Make a Podcast in South Africa. I'm your host, Jonathan Varnker, and I'm a little anxious about today's episode because my guest is an expert in interview technique. His name is Wayne Turner, and he has worked in radio and podcasting for decades. He's conducted over 8,000 interviews. He's been a radio and video producer at CCFM since 1997, and he runs podcasting courses at Bergfried High School's Continuing Education Center. Wayne, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
It's my absolute pleasure.
Our mutual friend, Nicole Engelbrecht, luminary of the South African podcasting world, passed you on to me and said that with your experience in 8,000 interviews, you'd be able to add great value to something that I think our members don't focus on enough, which is actively improving their interview skills. What's your opinion on podcasters specifically and the kind of focus or lack thereof that they give interviewing?
Right, before I answer that, I just want to say Nicole was my most successful student, so I'm very proud of her. Not that I contributed a huge amount. She's my first student on the Continuing Education Program. So yeah, I'm very proud of what she's been able to do.
Awesome.
Right, so the answer is no. Podcasters don't put enough into their interview process. When you listen to podcasts, you know, some are naturals, and you'll hear them conducting a great interview. Others are not quite sure. Some stick to their notes or their script. Some, you know, as I said, fly by the seat of their pants. But really, I think the biggest thing anyone can do is to continue to educate themselves, improve, upskill, because that's key to it. I know with mine, I never had any formal interviewing education. You know, over 26 years of radio, if you don't get it right, you don't stay in the business. I mean, that's the bottom line. And I think with podcasts, because you're doing it yourself, you don't report to a boss. If you're bad, you stay bad. Or if you're good, you just get better because you know, you're your own boss in that respect. So, yeah, I really do think that podcasters should take the time. I mean, I've been through every podcast course, free one that I can think of. I've read the books. I've listened to all the podcasts on podcasting. Mm-hmm. And it's just a basic, you know, upskilling. I know you in your situation after a couple of years, you've got to a position where you're able to do the job just because you've been listening to yourself, looking at improving, finding out where you can. So, yeah, I mean, the very nature of this interview to assist people is what we should be looking at.
Sure. Yeah, as you say, we don't have bosses and we don't often listen to, I find I don't often listen to the shows that I produce. I don't go and re-listen to a 45-minute interview that I was in, you know. We listen to it during the edit, and in the edit, we're listening for mistakes and, you know, things to fix, which is why I think also, the membership of the SAPG community is useful because you can post your show and say, give me feedback. And if you can deal with it, then do it. Like anyone who's listening, you know, put your episode and post your show and not just for sharing purposes, say, you know, give me some feedback. So, I mean, it's obviously not something you necessarily put a hard number to, but how much better can a show be if the anchors put in the work on interview skills?
Well, the answer to that is 10% or 500%. Depends where your show is at that point and how good you are. Because if you start at pretty average and you take time to invest in yourself, you're going to see the whole improvement. I mean, it's a numbers game. You'll see big improvement if you put a big amount of work into your podcast. I'm not saying that, you're pretty good at interview. If you are pretty good at interviewing and you've got a good podcast, right, still invest in yourself and you'll find that you're going to iron out the little glitches here and there. But the average person who's starting out who wants to be a great podcaster, because the easiest podcasts to do aren't the monologues. They're the ones in an interview process because you can ask questions and you can develop rapport and you can get a, if your guest is good or has got great or interesting information, you're going to develop that. So it is one of the more successful podcast types. Yeah. Interview.
Yeah, and from a nuts and bolts perspective as well, your content plan kind of writes itself because you just, well, who am I going to chat to next and what are they an expert in?
Absolutely. It's so easy. Well, maybe I'm because I've been in the business so long, but give me a great guest. I'll have a great show. You know, it's dependent on how good your guest is, what the information they can provide, how they carry themselves on air. Mm. Bunch of factors, but if you work hard at getting great guests, not just well, who can I interview this week? And it's someone who's boring, doesn't have a good story. You are going to end up in a situation where the end product is going to be less than acceptable.
Right. So before we get into the kind of techniques and skills, what is the difference between an interview that's been conducted well and one that hasn't? And, you know, how does it express itself in the final production?
You'll hear on some of the radio stations, people who are pretty much self-centered. I don't want to mention names, but you'll have an interviewer who basically makes a long statement and wants the guest to agree and say, yes, what you said is right. You don't want that. You know, it's more of the guest and less of you, the less your voice. And I think that's a problem with many podcasters. They want to hear their own voice and they want to get it out there and they want to sound like a broadcaster. But key to any interview process is less of you and more of the guest, because the listener is not interested in your voice all the time. The listener wants to listen to the interesting interview, wants to catch up with what the information they're providing. So yeah, definitely less of you and more of the guest.
It's interesting because in preparing the kind of rough script for this interview, I found myself actually, because I was writing about verbal tics, and I found myself writing quite a long opinion piece about verbal tics, and then I eventually deleted it all and said, you know, what are your thoughts on this? You know, do you think that in general is a good or a bad thing?
Describe what you mean by verbal tics. So we're on the same page.
Well, what I tend to do is I do tend to say like and you know a lot.
Me too.
Yeah. I make a clicking sound with my mouth sometimes before I start speaking. So I go, and then I start talking.
Yeah.
You know, so I was making a long list of them and saying that writing about how these can impede the show or can stand out and annoy the ear, or you have to fix them in the edit all the time. And then I realized, you know, I'm dictating the answer to you, essentially.
No, so you're stating exactly what the problems are. Like, you know, there's a couple of them. Instead of umming, you replace it with something else. Like, you know, so you'll say, you know, or like.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other thing is the most irritating one is the deep breath. Heading on to your next point. I've had some interviews where it's all this deep breath. And when you listen to it in the edit, it sounds really, really bad. But, you know, verbal tics, the only way you can actually get rid of them is self-awareness. And then, of course, in the edit, looking into listening to the edit and working out what are your most common ones. Like if you use, I've just used it, like if you use, sometimes you don't notice it, you know. But then if it's by itself or it's a like, you know, that's you're just replacing. Mm. So you need to be aware of it. And you even need to write it down on a little card in front of you, say no ums, no likes, no you know. We all do it. And a lot of the time it does fit in the conversation, but when you repeat it, the repetitiveness of it is where the listener is going to they're just going to switch off. You know, you only in radio, I suppose, podcasting as well, you're only one switch away from being turned off.
Yeah, that's kind of the razor edge that you walk, is the moment you become boring or you become annoying, it's very easy with all the content in the world to leave.
The person who continually reviews their work, listens to it and says, you know, is that irritating? Is it, can it get through? Will it pass? You've got to have the self-awareness and critical ear to your own work that's looking at self-improvement. So if you don't do this, you're going to eventually get into a habit, and it's very difficult to break those habits.
Yeah, and then only years down the line, someone turns around and says, by the way, you know, you have this very annoying habit of saying like all the time. I mean, my dad did it to me when I was, I think I was 23 or 24, and I would move to Japan to go and teach English. And he said, but you can't even speak English. Every second word you say is like. And now I have this complex about the word like. Anyway, that's my damage.
Just on the topic of...
Oh, there,
of
you did that. You did the lip smack.
Yes, I did it right there. I'm going to edit that out, so don't worry about it. On the topic of the tics, I spoke to a KFM presenter who was an anchor for years on a KFM drive show, and he said that what he tried to do was, instead of be comfortable with silence, so instead of having to fill the moment with an or a like, you can just instead say nothing.
It's different if it's live radio and it's going out live all the time, and you need to be aware and not to have those pauses too long, because as you know, we call that dead air. You don't want too much dead air, but rather pause, think, speak.
So speaking of thinking, let's just go on to preparation. So how important is preparation before an interview? What does a well-prepared interviewer look like?
That is subjective. I did no preparation for this interview. I just grabbed, I quickly printed out your script, ran to the studio, and I wrote, made a few notes, and then I'm ready. Now, that is pure years and years of experience.
I was going to say, you're the one with 8,000 interviews, so.
Yeah, so that's what you want to work towards. I don't use notes. If I'm doing an interview, I might come up with three questions, or if it's a technical interview, I want to put some things down. But most times, and the exciting part of an interview, I don't know much about you, you don't know much about me, but as we chat like two friends, the interview develops, and we will get into it a little bit, active listening. One of the key things for any interview is to sit and to listen, and listening will supplement if you don't have enough script or notes, because you're listening to go down a rabbit hole or somewhere that the guest has something interesting. So if you're listening and not talking a lot, you're going to pick up those things and you'll sound like an expert interviewer, because the person starts talking about a time in their life. You pick up on something, you go down that rabbit hole, and you might not even get back onto the original interview because you found something. I mean, I'm not saying that's the pattern. Don't do that. But sometimes you do that. But if you're a great listener, it does supplement any shortfall in preparation, not to negate preparation. I mean, preparation is important. If you're a new interviewer, come up with a whole bunch of questions that you want to ask the person, and then have three or five in reserve, just in case the person is a little bit boring or they you can't get a lot out of them. The answers come too quickly. We'll deal with that a little bit later in the interview. But then you've got those questions in reserve. But make sure, not I don't believe in scripts at all. We can get to that later as well. But make sure you have sufficient questions to ask the guests, because in the interview process, it's all about those good questions that'll get good answers.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess for the junior or the beginner podcaster, a script can be a tool or it can be a crutch equally.
Absolutely. You know, see, that's one of my favorites, you know, you know. You pick it up very quickly when you're aware of it. Yeah. But the newbie who's starting out, my suggestion to them is to have a form of a script, to say, well, this is my interview. I mean, like you've done here, just because you're experienced doesn't mean you shouldn't have a nice intro, pure reading that you read that interview. Because if you get good at script reading, it sounds like you're actually speaking. That's the name of the game. That's what I work to achieving, is getting that script to sound like that. But to have your script, have your questions laid out, make little notes, have a good, so a good intro and a good outro is what makes a great interview. You come in strongly, good questions, and you exit strongly.
And when it comes to before the interview with your guest, your pre-interview, right? So, I mean, I sent you literally 20 minutes before I sent you the interview script. What's the best way to do this?
Look, it depends. There's two ways. I mean, of course, you've got the in-studio interview. So that one, you can either meet with the person during the week because they will be close to you. Or once they come into the studio, let's say your show's at 2 o'clock, ask them to come in 20 minutes earlier. If you can, send them potential questions ahead of the time, drop an email or a WhatsApp so they have some sort of understanding. You come, you sit together for 10, 15 minutes, say, this is the direction I want to go. These are some of the questions. This is going to be cool. Don't worry. There's no one listening to you. This is just a recording. Great. Allow them to get comfortable. That's important. You know, the basic things, make sure they've got some water for a dry mouth, that they're sitting on a comfortable chair, the mic is the right height, etc. When it's not in studio over the phone, it's a little bit more difficult because you don't even have that physical eye-to-eye contact. All you've got is over the phone. So, of course, everything needs to be done over the phone. We had a nice chat over the phone before we did this interview, then a couple of WhatsApp messages. It makes the person comfortable. I feel comfortable. I have a basic understanding. I get your tone of voice, who you are. The friendlier you are with your voice over the phone, it's going to make a better interview.
Absolutely. Okay, so I think you've more or less now answered the next question about engagement and connection when it comes to making a guest feel comfortable. So in that pre-interview process or any kind of upfront, I should have actually put this question next, which is building a narrative. You know, you prepare for the interview, and most interviews have a certain structure to them, which generally runs, you know, this is Wayne, this is his bio, this is what he's done, this is why you should listen to him, this is its expertise. And then you get into the questions and you start, and look, I'm going to be a little bit editorial here and say that I feel it's a mistake to say, tell me about your entire life and how you came to be doing what you're doing.
You are so right. Okay, you know, you don't want a person to tell you their story. I did a series of podcast interviews for a guy who was, during apartheid, a white old Afrikaans guy, arrested 7 times and locked up in Polesmoor. He has an incredible story. Mm. Now, some of it, he had his own script, which he gave to me, but we never stuck to the script. We used it just to refer to. But, you know, that whole process of mixing the guy telling the story and asking the questions, it's so important. If you get to a point where the person is talking freely, hey, let them talk as long as it's interesting stuff. And as they start to break, slow down or take a pause, then you can come in with the next the next question. But, you know, it's just doing the basics. Get the basics right and you're going to have a great interview.
So I'm just jumping back to that bio, and then followed by, you know, what are you doing now? What lies in the future? What challenges have you faced? In general, that roughly kind of follows, I guess, the structure of the hero's journey, and most interviews are kind of like that. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, stick to the basics again. How, who, why, what, when? Mm. Those sort of questions. Let's say it's a photographer. Mm. I mean, you can start with the whole process is, why did you get involved in photography? What was the interesting or the thing that captured you that created the passage? And then you can get into the other questions. How did you start? Where did you start? What did you do to get the training, the upskilling, the education? So you can stick to those. You can have those as the basis. And then as you, of course, the act of listening, listening to what the answers are, and then looking for those little hooks that you can hook into and make the interview more interesting. Never, never, ever ask closed questions. Do you like brown soup? Yes. Right. No. Yeah, that's one of the things we learn very, very early, because a person who just answers in the affirmative or the negative is not what you right. ask them. What do you think about it? Why do you like it so much? I know some guests are still going to give short answers, and that is really sometimes like pulling teeth. I do cut a show halfway through and then just play music for the rest of the show because it was so difficult in getting those answers. And you are going to come up with those guests at some stage in your podcasting radio career.
But more commonly, you get a guest who will kind of tend to waffle and go off on tangents and stuff. How do you handle that?
If it's in studio, I use signs. I tell them a sign for getting close to the microphone. I put up my hand just to say, just hold on. I'll put up my finger for a question just to let them know that you want to break in.
Okay,
you need to know when to break in. If the guest is one of those people, you just be very firm. Just hold on there. I just want to clarify, or can I ask you a different aspect of your life? You know, once you get people in a position where they understand that you're in charge, you've got to be in control of the interview. You've got to do it respectfully. You've got to do it carefully, but you need to be in control of the interview. It's more difficult over the phone, of course, because you don't have that visual connection.
But it does also perhaps give nervous guests the comfort that you are in charge and that they don't just have to keep talking until something goes wrong.
You're so right, because the guest needs to be made comfortable. They feel that they having to do this, they've never done it before. There's a microphone in front of them. You want to make them comfortable. So if you can take control of the situation in a very comfortable, respectful way, it's going to help them. But the other problem is to get them going. And what often helps is getting a person to talk about themselves. Most people like to talk about themselves. If you get the right questions going, people will talk about themselves.
So is there such a thing as deploying flack or chaff questions, which you're not going to include in the edit, and you know that, and it's just a means of loosening up the guest?
Yeah, often you can do that. I'm just thinking of the difference between radio, live radio, and of course recording. With recordings, you can actually say, please stop there. I just want to ask you another question. You edit out afterwards. So, But if you treat your podcast as if you're doing a live radio interview, you just cut down on the editing process. You know, there's a saying with video and film, shoot for the edit. You want to get everything so that in the edit it's perfect.
Yeah, as in record more than you need, or as in try to get as close to an edited show as you can?
So you want to control the interview and say to the person, interrupt at the right place if you're face-to-face or over the phone, but don't think, I can mess up and then I can correct it. Never have that attitude. It doesn't work in video and it won't work in podcasting.
Sure. And also I find that there's a ratio of about 3 hours of editing per 1 hour of recorded audio, so you're just making work for yourself.
That's pretty accurate, although when I do my radio shows, I don't edit.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I sit in studio, I know what I want, I watch my timer, they have to be exactly 40 minutes to the second, and I just make sure that I'm not making mistakes and that we get it right. Sometimes there might be a little thing and I leave a long pause so I can see in the actual audio file that I need to do something there, but 99 out of 100 shows, I don't edit. That's because I shoot for the final product, and I've got experience. Don't take that as an example of how to do it. That's just an experience. And you'll probably find the same thing the more and more experienced you get.
As we're sitting here, I'm looking at the timeline of my recording on my side here. And one question that I've always wanted to ask a pro is, I tend to, when people are speaking, when the guest is speaking, I have a habit of going, And I'm not sure if you're supposed to just be totally silent or whether you can give those cues, or like, what do you think?
Use that appropriately.
Right.
Don't use it all the time.
I don't say every 5 seconds.
Precisely. But when they make a good point, say yes or but don't use it often, because people get, when they're listening, when they have someone going, it's like almost grunting, and they think, oh, that's so irritating. But rather use an affirmative, yes, great point. Different, be creative in your responses. Acknowledges. Find a word that acknowledges for you. Use a variation of words, of course. Say great point, yes, I understand. Choose a few and then
I get it.
Make use of those rather than, I call it the grunt.
Yes, you know, of course.
Which I think works kind of well in a face-to-face non-recording situation, you know, where you've got, first of all, the visual cues and body language and all of those kind of things. But a lot of people, when they have a conversation, one person is going, like constantly.
The reason you do it is to affirm or let the person know that you're listening, you're getting the point, so they don't sort of feel you're going, then you look at your sliders or your buttons or you look at the time, and the person feels they're talking into a void. An interview is a chat between two friends, and with the listeners, have got the sort of they eavesdropping on a great conversation. That's what you like in radio. That is, you want that person to feel like they're eavesdropping in a conversation between two people. So you maintain that that friendliness between the two people, that connection, and right, the other person listens in.
Okay, so which is interesting, because the dynamics of a friend's conversation are kind of different to, let's say, a YouTuber, right? And I feel like this is maybe a symptomatic of American-style YouTubing, I would say, or just the need for attention. In the attention economy, it's always like, hey guys, today we're talking about this, and I can't wait for you to hear this guy. Wayne's amazing, and today we're going to, like, I feel like kind of like a pressure to be that kind of interviewer, but I'm not intrinsically that kind of person. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Not at all. You know, when people do the hype, I listen, I think, how do you say it? Weak point shout.
Right.
So the louder they get and the more enthusiastic, I'm thinking all that hype, they're hyping up something that maybe is not that great.
Right.
Too much hype is not a good thing.
Yeah, he doth protest too much.
Absolutely. If you've got a great guest, do a nice intro. Use a bit of variation, modulation, and tempo with your voice. Use your voice, because remember, in video, people can see your actions and see what you're doing. But in audio, your voice does it all. So use your voice to a degree, but don't do the big hype, because some people see right through it.
Okay, so this is one of the first interviews that I've done in quite a long time where I actually can't see you. We're doing purely audio right now. And almost all the interviews these days are conducted over some kind of Zoom channel or video channel, right? Do you think that negatively impacts the quality of the audio recording?
No, the quality of the audio recording depends on the person doing the interview and the way you've got it set up, your pre-interview, so the person feels comfortable. Good technical, that's great, but everything rests on the connection between the two people. I feel so comfortable. Certain amount of his experience. You've got great questions, and your interview style makes the guest feel comfortable. You know, you've got a sort of all those things working at the same time. And it's good, because over the phone, you don't have that eye-to-eye contact. So you've got to try and make it work just with the ear.
Sure. And timing, of course, being the biggest challenge, because I don't know, you know, whether you're taking a breath to keep talking or whether you are, you know, finished the statement.
But you don't want to talk over the other person.
Fortunately, that is fixable in the edit.
Yeah, it is fixable, but it means bad radio, bad podcasting if you get it wrong. And a lot of people, but again, you're not trying to put your opinion across. I know you explained, like, on the ticks, but that was great. You gave some background and a good point, but you're not trying to make your voice. You're allowing the guest to speak, which is the important thing. And if you're basically a conductor, you're conducting, and you want to make sure the guest comes in at the right moment, you say your words, especially when there's more than one guest.
Right. So, which I've done a few times, and it is more challenging. But when you talk about both active listening and letting the guest speak, so let me bring up Joe Rogan here, who speaks at least 50% of the time on his own podcast. Like, he's there to interview the guest and also to be himself and to express his own opinion. Yeah. So do you think there's a balance?
That's great for Joe Rogan. And that's great for many of the top guys. People tune in to listen to his voice. People don't tune in to listen to my voice or your voice. We are not the ones giving the expert opinion. You know, how can I put it? Let me explain this. You have guests, and you'll have, of course, your guest expert. I have guest experts as well. Someone who has a lot of information. They can often do a bit of a co-host with you, because they'll have good questions as well. But when it's just average Joe like you and me, and I still call myself average Joe after 20-something years, is that we want to pull the best out of the person. We're not recognized. Wayne Turner is not recognized as a top radio personality or podcasting personality, but Joe Rogan is. So people, it's how the person, how the listeners perceive the person. So they perceive Joe Rogan having to have a great amount to put in. So 50-50 is great. But when you average Joe, make sure that less is more of your voice.
Okay, before we get on to my last question then, let's just talk about sticking to the script, which we did mention earlier. But what are your thoughts on improvisation, going off on a tangent, and the general usage of a script?
Right, so a script should never be like your introduction. An introduction is different to a script, because you want to put specifics in it. You don't want to ad lib. You want to be nice, punchy, to the point, come in with a very strong start. But when using scripts, I don't believe, unless you really, really experience, that you should read from the script. I believe in bullet points. I tell my students, use bullet points. Put sufficient information in bullet points. So if you read it, it sounds weird. So you're forced to take those points and just use them to jog your memory. It's a skill that you need to pick up, but use a script with bullet points is very, very important. You don't sound scripted, because if you're not experienced and you sound scripted, people don't like it. They just think, oh, he's just reading off something.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think I do tend to script, but I'm a writer and I have kind of presented a lot in been on debate teams and that kind of nonsense. So I don't know. How do you feel like I did the intro? Because I read that intro straight out. Do you think that it was relatively natural?
I watched you read it. It's perfect. You know, you're able to get it across, and people will accept an intro being read much more than the body of it.
Sure.
But if you're a good writer, but I think that's part of the thing. If you're a good writer, not many people are good writers. So if they just do a script and it's not good, you've got a bad script being read well.
Right.
You get my point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the bullet point idea also is useful, A, because scripting is a lot of work, and a lot of people, as you say, aren't writers, don't consider themselves writers, don't want to do it. And B, the beginning of a podcast is an intense time when you've got calls to action and go to our website and thanks for following and this is the guest. So there's a lot to be done, you know?
There's a lot of ad-libbing you can do, which is important because it makes it sound better. You know, improvising on various points is good.
Mm. And
this could I just put a point in there. Nicole Engelbrecht with True Crime SA uses a lot of scripts, but because she's become so experienced, she does it in such a good way that keeps the listener's attention.
Mm. And she feels like she's speaking just to you and she's telling you a story.
That's another very important point. If you're speaking, if you're doing a monologue and you're speaking, speak to one person. It's not a sound like a New Yorker poison. I don't know where that came from. But in your mind, we do it in radio as well. Visualize a person you're speaking to and speak to them. So you've got that in your mind. So you're connecting with a person. You're not, especially when you're reading a script.
So when you, I mean, that's a lot to have a conversation with someone. I guess in that moment, in a monologue, you can focus on who you're speaking to, the listener. But I guess in the interview, you've got to stay laser focused on the person you're talking to, right?
Absolutely. And of course, it's very similar to doing a monologue when you're speaking to one person. If you're interviewing one person over the phone, you've got to keep that person in mind. So you've got to focus on a particular, I saw your face on WhatsApp, so I know what you look like, but you've got to give attention to the person you're speaking to.
Right. And just on the very basic nuts and bolts stuff, how do you make sure that, because you've got your own studio and you record in there, what do you keep out of the studio? And I'm going to say phones here. Like, what do you do to make sure that you are focused in the interview?
Of course, phones, which can distract unless, like, I'm using a phone now for us to communicate, and then we're recording on either end. That's great. But having a phone that goes beep, 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 although in radio, if something like that happens, it's happened to me with my phone, not perfect. And I just make a joke about it. I said, I'm an idiot. I didn't turn it off. And, right. You know, don't try make a big thing about it. Just say, off a guest, their phone goes off and we're in studio. I'll just signal to him not to worry. Give them a thumbs up. They can turn it off. Maybe make a comment or just in my mind say, well, I'll edit there. And then if it did go off, then I'll repeat the question just so I've got some editing space.
Right, absolutely. So in the edits, let's say you're doing the edits, and while you're doing it, what should you look out for, or how should you improve your technique by listening to what you've recorded?
Reviewing and your performance is vital. I would always listen to my radio shows until it got to a point when you realize you're doing a decent job. But listen to it and see where your mistakes are. Try and put yourself in the listener's position when you re-listen to it, and say, if I was a listener, what would I be irritated by? What would I be looking out for? And then, of course, what you can it's blatant when you review it. You know, I shouldn't be doing that. You know, it becomes. I'm emphasizing it, but it does get to that person's ear, and then of course they tune out. So you want to do everything to prevent that person tuning out, so you don't become irritating.
One kind of thing that I've faced in edits is people who work the R's and ums so closely into the words that they're saying that it's almost impossible to do an edit without a jump.
I zoom right in to the last little thing and I edit.
The last, okay.
So I was going to ask, what's worse, annoying verbal tics or a obvious edit?
I don't know what obvious edits are. I learned long ago to make sure they aren't obvious. I'd rather take out a whole point or a sentence and do away with it than leave something in that sounds too obvious.
Okay. So you the goal is to make the conversation natural to the point that the person doesn't realize there's an edit been done.
Precisely. You want the overall sound and feel to be good. Mm. When a person listens to that, think, well, that's great. Because you don't want anything to detract from a really good guest or a good show to have little things that just irritate people. You want to make sure that the whole show captures captures the attention of the listener.
Right. I wonder if there's this is just a theory, but I wonder if there's a generational thing here in that there is a descript generation coming up, you know, who have automated AI tools to remove lots of things, likes, ums, ahs, repeats, even content-based stuff. And when you do that in audio, sometimes the edits are a little bit clumsy, but maybe people who are in it who want to be time efficient are not so bothered by that. And if you do it on video, if you're editing Descript on video and you use that tool, then the cuts become super obvious because it's jumpy as hell.
Yeah, well, I don't believe in video podcasting. I don't believe I'm a purist podcasting. It's audio, no video involved. It's time consuming and not really a podcast. I know Apple will deliver some video casts, whatever you want to call them, but having been in radio for so long, I'm an audio, purist.
Sure. And, if nothing else, that the push and pull, the controversy, if you will, between video and audio is at least gives us something to talk about. Whenever
it does.
Podcasters go quiet, you can say, what do you think about video?
that's all it's worth, is to have some controversy and people to keep moaning and talking about it. I'm in Facebook groups and all sorts of groups. People continue to...
Never ends, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't get involved and I just carry on and do my podcasting, which is audio only.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, Wayne, thank you so much for your time. Here is where my scripting weakness shines through, in that I don't have an outro for this, but I appreciate you telling us about interview technique. And I hope we can connect on other topics as well in the future, because it sounds like you've run the gamut.
I'm passionate about radio and podcasting. Totally, totally passionate. If I can think of a new podcast idea, I go for it. Or someone says to me, oh, I'm thinking of starting a podcast, I just jump in and say, you know, this is how you do it. I don't make much money from podcasting, but I enjoy and I'm passionate about podcasting.
Awesome, Wayne. Thank you so much for your time.
It's my absolute pleasure. Anytime. It was really great being interviewed by you. You've got a skill and a technique that when I first started, I wish I had.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Cheers.